Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief of Vanity Fair. If you enjoy binge-watching the best TV shows and love hearing from the actors and showrunners who make them happen, then subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our Hollywood reporters take you behind the scenes of the year's most anticipated projects, the industry's biggest moves, and the hardest-fought awards races. From The Crown to The Real Housewives, we've got the inside scoop. As a special thank you to our still-watching audience, we're offering 15% off a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair. Visit vanityfair.com today and use promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15 for 15% off a yearly digital subscription to everything you want.
Welcome back to Still Watching WandaVision. I'm Vanity Fair senior writer Joanna Robinson.
And I'm Vanity Fair chief critic Richard Lawson.
This is actually not our last Still Watching WandaVision episode, because we will be back next week with a sort of bigger wrap-up of the season. We'll have some fun guests next week. Catherine Hahn and showrunner Jack Schaefer will be joining us next week. So we will have, you know, one more go around Westview, one more run around the block on this show. Also, I have yet to chat with Catherine Hahn and Jack Schaefer, so I'll be doing that sometime early next week. So if you have questions for Catherine Hahn or WandaVision showrunner Jack Schaefer, please do send them over stillwatchingpod@gmail.com, and I'll ask them your questions. So hit me up with those. But like, let's say you're just joining us for the first time. Let's say you don't even know what Still Watching is. Richard, for the first time ever in this podcast history, I'm going to make you explain it. What's Still Watching?
Well, basically, you and I pick a show, and sometimes Anthony Bresnahan, our colleague, pick a show that we're kind of obsessed with, and we break it down week by week. We answer listener questions, and we have interviews, and we theorize, and most of those theories, at least in WandaVision's case, prove to be wrong.
Before we get into it all, I will just say that, like, my prevailing comment as I was watching the finale last night was, oh well, oh well, yeah. Like every 5 minutes. So we will be breaking down the series finale, which is the title also, the series finale of WandaVision. And so if you haven't watched yet, you might want to go watch that and come back. Anthony Bresnahan will be with us in the back half as ever to talk about some, you know, nerdier comic book stuff. And then the great Emma Caulfield, who did have a little moment in this episode, will be joining us here. And I'm just excited to talk about it to Emma, because, you know, I'm a longtime Emma Caulfield fan. And she worked with Jack Schaefer before. So I think it'll be fun to hear about, like, all the secrecy, all the fan theories around her character, and like how that landed with her. So we'll have that interview in this episode. And we have your listener emails as well, stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. You can send in more still if you want to. As I said, we're going to do one more big WandaVision episode. So Richard, do we want to start with some emails you might have gotten this morning?
Yeah, the first one I wanted to share is from Alex in New Jersey. And Alex writes, well, I wanted to write in because I anticipate the Vision of it all during the finale may ruffle some feathers, but I found it deeply satisfying. I don't mind White Vision leaving at the end without sharing a scene with Wanda. The strong implication, based on the Double Vision dialogue scene, is that White Vision, despite now having his old memories unlocked, but not implanted memories of fake Vision's Westview life, is not simply who he was before he died in Infinity War. He's something else, and his relationship to Wanda could be distinct as well. There's a whole movie's worth of potential unwinding who this new Vision is and how that might relate to Wanda. There would be no way to do that justice to that within the confines of this finale. On top of that, fake Vision and the life he had with Wanda in the Hex was real and deserved the beautiful farewell scene he received. That version of the character and his life with her is truly gone, just as the Infinity War Vision is also gone. A new one stands, and he is very different, so to me that's not a cheat or an unsatisfying end. P.S. I love that Agatha will be able to return in the Loki mode of benevolent antagonist.
Yeah, I'm glad we're starting here, because this putting two potential characters on ice, both Agatha and Vision, for future use is a very smart little Marvel move here. And I'm glad we're starting here, because the farewell to Vision, you know, the purple Vision, between that scene is my favorite part of the finale. And so I'm glad to start on like something that I loved about the finale, which was that scene, which I found very emotional. What do you think, Richard?
Well, with all due respect to Alex and to you, I think it was kind of a cop out. I think if you're going to do a whole show that's about grief and then at the end be like, but he'll be back. Yes, in an altered form, whatever. I think that's a little bit like Marvel gonna Marvel, you know? I just filed a review to the site of the finale and kind of the series as a whole that was a little more negative than I had been at the beginning, just because I think that there had been this kind of relentless, it felt like marketing assault, that this is a show that's deep and meaningful and about grief and all that. And it addressed that in the end, but I think it also was like, but again, we're this huge cinematic universe and things, no one's ever really dead. And, you know, good luck with your actual mortal grief. We're going to, you know, we're going to see Vision again. That said, that's one half of me or one side of me. The other side of me totally agrees with Alex that that does sound like a kind of a compelling potential movie in the future, or maybe another series or another season of this. And you know, I like these actors. I like the sort of bond that these characters have, you know, albeit, I guess this is a new tertiary or third character or something. So, yeah, on the one hand, I feel a little bit swindled on this sort of like Marvel insisting that this was a sort of deeper show with like pathos. And when it's actually just kind of like, you know, another Marvel thing, which is fun. But on the other hand, I like the fun Marvel stuff, and I feel like White Vision is it factors into what's to come in a probably crucial way.
I'm soliciting input on what to call that character other than White Vision, even though that is, of course, like, you know, what, well, the show is just billing him as the Vision. In the closing credits, they made that it's like West Vision, and the Vision is White Vision. But I was on Twitter last night sort of asking people what to call the character other than White Vision. Let me see if I can read a few potential. Someone said fission, which is like fake vision, right? But also nuclear fission, right? Someone suggested fission, which is like white and vision, which I read in Anton Yelchin's Star Trek accent, which is like Victor vision. Warvis, like Wario, but Jarvis, like, sure, cracked me up. Negavision, which is a Scott Pilgrim reference I really liked. Unseasoned Vision, cracked me up. Host Vision, which is a Westworld reference. So there was like a bunch of Clear Vision, a bunch of suggestions. I think we'll probably just end up calling him White Vision, unfortunately, but that is where we are. Yeah, I mean, bringing in some comics-based knowledge, I will say, when White Vision, which is a thing that happens in the comics, that Vision is rebuilt as this White Vision, he has no memory of Wanda and no attachment to her, and so they don't force that moment in this finale, which, as you say, like, or as the listener said, like, they didn't have enough time, I think, probably, to go there. But that's a traumatic moment for Wanda in her life, to see someone who looks like her husband, who doesn't remember her. So, like, when we saw White Vision get, you know, sort of, I don't know, rebooted by Wesley Vision or whatever, he did have Wanda memories in there. So I don't know exactly how they're going to play that out. But yeah, I mean, I do think it would have, I think I would have been like a sobbing mess on the floor if it had been like a real, real, real goodbye to Vision. And it is a little Disney of them to be like, for now, ta-ta for now, you know, so.
Well, yeah, and I think that like the ta-ta for now is, you know, in keeping with the house style in a way, like you said. But I do think that like there was a lot week to week with this show, with the coverage of the show, you know, I think the series itself, or Marvel itself, kind of advertising this, like, yeah, let's, like, it, you know, the memeable line about love persevering and all that. And to get people to watching the show to really like dig in with that and kind of grapple with their own feelings of loss or whatever, and then kind of be like, well, you can sit in that because we're just going to keep, you know, like we get to invent whatever. Like, I just felt a little bit like, I don't know, kind of mining this sort of communal therapy session and then sort of not sticking to the being like, I'm actually not an alcoholic, you know, like, I don't know. It just, I don't know. It felt a little bit like manipulative, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I'm clinging to those emotional moments, that moment between Wanda and Vision and the stuff with the kids, which we'll get to, mostly because that's the stuff I really wanted to see. And the CGI flying around shooting fireballs at each other is absolutely not what I wanted to see, but I knew it was coming. And so, and that was much more of the episode than I had wished it would have been. So there's this big conversation going on right now, right? Which is, before the series finale aired, director Matt Shakman, who directed all the episodes, gave this interview where he said, you know, everyone's going to be disappointed in the finale because people got too worked up about fan theories. And so they're going to be disappointed that the finale is much more straightforward than all the fantastical things that they had created for themselves. Al Pacino, Patrick Stewart, like, et cetera, et cetera. What the rabbit is, et cetera, et cetera. And I, so I went into the finale, like, determined to not let fan theories, like, our fun speculation time that we have on this podcast, get in the way of my enjoyment. So I told myself the thing that I really wanted was some authentically emotional moments, some good performances from Paul Bettany and Elizabeth Olsen during what I was hoping would be a goodbye scene. So I found myself satisfied by that. I found myself satisfied by some of the kids' stuff. And then the other stuff that I was dissatisfied by, I really don't think it had anything to do with fan theories not panning out. It just had to do with this third act Marvel thing that they do, where they feel like they do need to have this big spectacular fight. And I was just trying to think of, like, what, you know, you and I have both seen all the Marvel movies. What fight in the Marvel movies have I enjoyed, have felt like truly emotionally connected to the characters and not just something that they feel like a box that they feel like they need to check to appeal to maybe younger audiences who are excited to see a fight like that or something like that. And I came up with two examples. One was Captain America and the Winter Soldier, because it's this fight between Steve and Bucky on this, you know, helicarrier, and it is very emotional, like what's going on there. All the fights throughout that movie are very emotional, and that's why, probably why it's my favorite Marvel movie. And similarly, Iron Man 3, there's this big fight on this, you know, like, oil rig or whatever at the end, and where Iron Man has to, like, blow up all his suits, and that's connected to, like, a problem at the root of his relationship with Pepper and all this sort of stuff like that. So there's some, like, there's some stuff, there's some juice there. And while there's some juice here with, like, Wanda's trying to protect her home or her identity, or, you know, the potential sort of interesting dynamic between these two powerful women, at the end of the day, it felt more like one of those box checky things than the other thing, which I have liked in the past. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm so sort of, I'm really, like, torn about it, because I thought that third act with the big fight was sort of, okay, here we go, you know. But I kind of weirdly didn't mind it as much as I felt. And I think the scene, you know, the goodbye scene was so well acted, I think it had its, you know, like, it's a really dark thing that the show is considering, like, her children, like, just going away, you know. And then I think cutting to, like, her in this empty lot, I think that was pretty, you know, effective. But that kind of, the way that in the post credit scene set up the fact that, like, the kids probably aren't actually really gone either, that kind of bridge building to, like, future Marvel content, like Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, that bothered me more than Marvel just being plain Marvel in the third act and just having a big aerial fight, you know?
Interesting. Yeah,
I think they're trying to have their cake and eat it too, in a way. And, like, look, I'm in the thing that I wrote that's on vf.com if people want to read it. Like, at the end, I'm like, I'm still going to watch all this stuff. Like, I'm not pretending that I'm, like, above it or anything. But it's just, I think I get a little bit annoyed when things like this that are, like, pure, you know, premised on commercial, you know, interests and fun and sort of, you know, big spectacular stuff, try to then insist that they're doing something more profound or deeper or whatever, and then kind of just, like, exploit that sort of profile for clout in a way, you know, that bothers me more than Marvel or whatever just doing what they do, you know, again.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, basically Marvel here was taking a swing at some prestigier television type of storytelling, right? Like, I think the penultimate episode, you know, Wanda's therapy journey through her past traumas is such an ambitious thing to do and really convinced me that was the kind of show that they were trying to do. And the thing is, to your point, I think they're trying to do both. You know what I mean? And that, in this case, the blend is a little off. You know what I mean? So let's talk about... Well, let's go to this other email. What other email do we want to talk about here?
Well, let's take a look. So we have an email. You're talking about the one with the comparison to another show?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, this is from Tommaso from Italy. Well, he says actually from Brussels, but he's Italian. That sounds nice. He says, I would have loved to hear your takes on the third season of American Gods, the Star Show, which after a terrible season two is doing great, in my opinion. I also wanted to say that I was really struck with you mentioning the hysterical woman / unstable powered woman trope. What do you think of the season ending in that regard? To be honest, some points of the development of Wanda's story made me think a lot about Daenerys Targaryen, though luckily with a better conclusion. So what do you think about that as someone who... Have you seen Game of Thrones?
I think I caught an episode once. I've been thinking a lot about Daenerys and how, you know, this story... You know, I asked Elizabeth Olsen about... We've talked about it in the show. I asked Elizabeth Olsen about it when I interviewed her. I asked Kat Dennings about it. I'm certainly going to ask Jack Schaefer about it next week. But this idea that, like, Wanda in the comics, as she sort of loses her grip on her sanity, like, those stories have been written historically by male creators. And so I was interested to see how, and as you know, the writing team at Game of Thrones was all male in the final seasons. And so I was just interested to see what a female showrunner, a majority female writer's room, and like a thoughtful performer like Elizabeth Olsen, would do with this story, this trope of like the hysterical woman that we've seen Daenerys Targaryen, or Dark Phoenix is another one. You know, something I was really hoping that they wouldn't go quite lockstep with what we've seen from Wanda in the comics. And I think that they did manage that, honestly. Like, I think we feel a little fear for Wanda more than fear of Wanda, if that makes sense. And her traumatic journey, this emphasis on slowly breaking down the trauma and its evolution, I think is really strong because, you know, this was seeded in a bigger Marvel movie context, in Infinity War and Endgame. We get these moments with Wanda, but to give her 8 episodes to build up to it rather than a feature film, or as it felt like in Game of Thrones, just a really hasty run to the end line, you know? I think they're just giving that a lot more respect than it has received in the past, the nuance of it and the dangers of that trope. Does that make sense, Richard?
It does, yeah.
But...
No, it does make sense. No, yeah. I was just going to say that I think... the difference for me is that Daenerys was trying to seize control of a bad institution, you know, like that she felt she had the right to. Mm-hmm. And it was, so it's much more like geopolitical and about, you know, she was freeing people, but she was also, you know, her ultimate goal was to rule over people, you know? And I think that kind of like, sort of messianic mixed with militarized kind of ambition is a bit like a bit of a darker shade of that kind of trope. Whereas with Wanda, it's individual. And I think what we see her at the end in the second post-credit scene, where she's some manifestation of her is going about her day, much like Thanos in his little cabin, while actual Scarlet Witchy Wanda is like furiously learning more and more about, you know, magic or whatever. I don't know that we need to read that as her becoming, like you said, like dangerous, but like it's more just about evolution and like people changing. And I think that in a more meta sense, in terms of what Marvel needs to do now that they've ended one big phase of like the Avengers project and now need to sort of figure out what to do with all these ancillary things that are now, you know, coming out, like WandaVision and Falcon and the Winter Soldier and other, you know, movies with these characters that we know, but eventually I think they're going to have to come into some sort of convergence. And having a character who's been there since, you know, Age of Ultron, who has changed and who has grown more powerful, but also who has deepened in her characterization, I think, you know, from a business standpoint, that's how you kind of keep people engaged. Like the comic books, these characters change, they evolve. So I see it not as like a kind of final form the way it maybe was for Daenerys. I think this is just kind of like a stop on the Wanda kind of journey, I guess.
Yeah, yes, I think that's right. You're right. I think that is a good distinction to draw. And I think the fear for Wanda, like I wouldn't mind seeing her grow ever more powerful. I think that's great. But I think the fear for has to come in like some of the things that Agnes says about, or Agatha, sorry, I never know exactly what to call her, says about, you know, you don't know what you've done, or, you know, the Scarlet Witch, more powerful than the Sorcerer Supreme, Breaker of Worlds. Like, you know, that is language that could be setting her up to be not a villain of Doctor Strange, but our producer Dave is going to be happy when I say this, an antagonistic force. Do you know what I mean? Someone who is doing something. So let's game it out. Let's talk about this cabin scene at the end before we zoom back through the episode. If you didn't stay, there's two, you know, there's a mid-credits and sort of another mid-credits scene. And the second one is Wanda in this cabin that looks like Thanos' cabin or Tony Stark's cabin by the lake. A lot of cabins by the lake in Marvel. And we see her making tea for herself and also, as you say, sort of like studying and reading. This is a Doctor Strange move. We saw that in the Doctor Strange movie of Doctor Strange doing one thing while studying at the same time. So it's already showing her like leveling up to a Strange power level. And then she hears her kids and somewhere, these kids that she invented, that she said goodbye to, you know, and she has that worried look on her face. And so you could see, you know, Anthony and I talked about this a little bit last week as a possibility, but you could see a Doctor Strange film where Wanda, in her search for her children, in maybe ripping open the multiverse in order to find them. That's an empathetic move, right? If she does that, we're still kind of with her. But whatever those consequences are might be something that Doctor Strange needs to intervene and set right. And that that feels like somewhere they may be going. And as you say, to have someone, it's so much more, rather than just introducing a random new villain of the week, of the episode, of the film, at the beginning of the film, to have that antagonistic force be someone we met back as a teenager back in Ultron, and someone we cared about because of their journey in this series, that's really strong and smart storytelling, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And like, yeah, you know, It's funny that this was a show that was sort of about these TV tropes or concerned itself with TV tropes. And when people really, a lot, you know, I've read people describe the whole Marvel movie series as a TV show, you know.
Oh, yeah, I've definitely seen that.
Because we have recurring characters and whatever. And and so it, if we think of it in those terms, like, you know, eventually Miranda moves to Brooklyn. Eventually Wanda tears open the multiverse. You know, like it's just like like characters change and you know, and then Samantha and Miranda have a little side plot in one episode, which they haven't had before, you know? So like if this is all television in the macro sense, like it behooves the people creating it to develop characters and to have them make choices that change their circumstances and not be so like linearly defined, I guess. And I think that, you know, I'm curious to see where that goes, you know. And I think that one question I had for you about this final episode was something we've kept harping on with the Evan Peters playing a version of Wanda's brother. And it seemed like that was kind of resolved in a way we didn't expect with this episode, where he was just some actor who lived in the town. And maybe that was just kind of the show making a little winky meta joke at the audience, being like, remember when he played that character in a different movie series? Rather than it being like some sort of deeper, you know, prying of, you know, the multiverse possibility.
There's still a possibility, though very slim, that in some future something we find out that, oh, let's say Ralph Boner it was Jimmy Woo's like person in who was in witness protection and will try. I mean, you know, maybe let's cling to the shreds of that, but like it seems this is the only element of the finale that I'm a little salty about, because everything else you might chalk up to us getting like sort of high on our own supply in terms of fan theories, and that I'm not mad about, honestly. 0% mad. Not mad. I think that Paul Bettany teasing himself as the cameo is one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. I think it's really funny. The Evan Peters Ralph thing just really falls flat for me. And it feels like an intentional, something that I think they thought would be cute and just really backfired on them. And it makes me sad because I like Evan Peters a lot, and I wanted him around as Quicksilver. I believed that he was Quicksilver, and we were going to get some fun multiverse stuff. I understand that they didn't have time to do all of that in one season finale, but I don't know. The conclusion of it wasn't like a really fun, oh, you scallywags moment that I think they were hoping it would be. At least
it was a boner joke.
It was a boner joke. One of our listeners pointed out to me that Boner is the name of, I had forgotten, Kirk Cameron's best friend in Growing Pains. His name is Boner. Sure, so maybe it's a Growing Pains joke. But yeah, just and it was part of a sort of like weird sidelining of Monica, where Monica didn't get, you know, everyone got like a little moment. Monica gets a little moment. Darcy gets a little moment. Jimmy gets a little moment. And maybe that's fitting because there are side characters, and this is about Wanda and Vision and Agatha. But it feels like too much or not enough at the same time, if that makes sense, for those characters.
Okay. So here, speaking of Monica.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a little Anthony on you. This is more for your segment with Anthony, but I'm going to ask anyway.
Okay. Yeah.
So when she steps in front of the kids and, I don't know, absorbs the bullets or something.
Yeah.
She gets a little invisible. And I was like, is this Fantastic Four? Is this like a different Sue Storm kind of thing? Or is this somebody else?
Oh, interesting. I don't know. To me, it was almost like... it was almost like a Vision thing. Like it phased through her the way that like when you see the two Visions fight, like their fists go through each other because they have this like phasing ability. So it feels like they almost gave her this like phasing Vision-y ability. I didn't read it as Fantastic Four, but I could be wrong, and please email me if you disagree.
No, I think I am wrong. I was just like, oh, I know there's another character who turns invisible, and they've been talking about putting them in the thing, you know, like that's all.
That's
Isn't
true.
Isn't someone making
true.
A movie with them? I guess so.
I mean, Kevin Feige said Fantastic Four are coming. There's no information on when, how far down the line of their planned slate that is going to be. But yes, they will be doing a Fantastic Four film. And there were rumors that John Krasinski might be cast as, you know, as Mr. Fantastic. And so people thought maybe he would, Reed Richards, his character, would show up in WandaVision. I mean, that's the thing, is like we were really going swinging for the fences with like some of the guesses around cameos and stuff like that. So, you know, no John Krasinski is Mr. Fantastic, which is fine. Honestly, fine with me. What we do get instead in that Monica post credits, is there's a Skrull there who says like an old friend of your mom, you know, heard you've been grounded, right? And wants to see you up in space, basically, which is our lead in, I suppose, to Captain Marvel 2.
So they're setting up two different movies in this series.
Yeah, at least, at the very least. If you go back and watch the end of Avengers Endgame, the last like four scenes of that movie is just setting up Disney Plus shows. There's like a WandaVision scene. There's a Falcon Winter Soldier scene. You know, it's just like that's what the end of Marvel things will be doing now is just throwing to the next thing.
What's the WandaVision scene in that? I don't remember.
It's just Wanda talking about Vision and her grief about him.
Right, 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 right.
You know what I mean? And so presumably she like went from there over to Sword HQ and was like, excuse me.
Right. And then Falcon and Bucky, we see them kiss. I remember that.
Yes, I
didn't make that up today.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
So we get this implication that Monica is going to go up in space and hang out with the Skrulls, and the old friend of her mom is either Ben Mendelsohn's character or maybe Samuel Jackson. Two options there.
Oh right, because we saw him in space.
Yes. Yes.
At the end of Spider-Man
Far From Home. Yeah. So go up to space and join Samuel Jackson up in the sky. Fun. I love that for Tiana Paris, you know, et cetera. But with that track being laid, I don't know. Is there anything else specifically you want to talk about in terms of this finale and what it did or didn't accomplish for you?
I feel like we've covered most of the bases. I think, you know, it's funny. I feel so duped every time you realize like, oh, they're just setting, the ending is setting up for more. And I'm like, oh, God, we're just being sold this like unending stream of product. And then I think about it a little more and I get excited about the new product, you know? And I'm like, I'm trying to be all like, oh, I don't buy into that like corporate, you know? And I don't in sort of some principle, but like, I am curious to see what Wanda does with Strange. And even I don't really like the Doctor Strange movie, but like, I don't know. I'm just sort of like, I guess it's like done well enough, you know, that I'm like, okay, sure. Like, give me more. I don't feel that way about other things from other companies that kind of try to do the same thing.
Yes.
So I guess it's a testament to them. I mean, and yes. And I think there were some issues I had with this episode and maybe with this show as a whole, you know, when viewed from the lens of this episode. But for the most part, like, if they're going to make bridge content that sort of, you know, kept us company while we sat at home waiting for vaccination before we can go back out to the movie theater someday and see these big spectaculars that they're kind of advertising with this show, at least it was good, you know, like at least it kept me engaged and was fun to theorize about and talk to you about. And, you know, I don't know. We can ask that much more from entertainment that I willingly paid for.
I mean, I guess, you know, to that end, let's pull a Marvel here ourselves and say, like, if you enjoyed listening to us on this, we just decided minutes before we hit record on this episode that we are going to come back for Falcon and the Winter Soldier, that's the next show we're going to do. So we're just going to keep doing this. So clearly, whatever sort of misgivings you might have about the finale, we're like, and we're still, you still have us, you know what I mean? And that's the Disney Plus / Disney way, where I'm just sort of like, but I'm still in, always.
Yeah.
And it has been so much fun to talk to you about the show and to hear from listeners about the show. And especially, like, I'm really tickled by how many people wrote in telling me they listened to this podcast with their kids. That blows my mind. That's never happened, you know, I think, as far as I know, before. So, you know, hopefully you folks will be back for Falcon and the Winter Soldier. But yeah, I mean, the finale, I feel, you know, pretty mixed on, but it doesn't really dampen my enthusiasm for the show as a whole. And I'm curious, you know, to see how it will go forward. I mean, that's the other thing is, like, can we really judge, you know, there was a lot of discussion about how this finale was going to be judged. And I was like, can we really judge this finale as a finale when it's really like, tune in next time on Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, right? Like, Wanda's story isn't over. This story is going to be ongoing. The boys presumably are going to be in the movie. Like, you know, so it doesn't feel like a finale. And so then the stakes are lower. That's, you know, I don't have to close the book on this story because it's ongoing. That's how I feel about it. So,
yeah, exactly. It's not an end of anything.
Right. All right. Well, we did it, Richard. I will talk to you maybe next week, if not the week after, for Falcon and Winter Soldier. And until then, where can folks find you?
You know, reading I got this like kind of big book of like runes, or I don't know what it is, but I'm just going to read it this weekend and see what happens. I don't know, maybe something will happen. While I'm doing that, you can read me on Twitter at Rylos and on VF.com.
Do you need when you read that book at night, do you need like a nightlight of some sort, or does it like glow on its own?
So it has this kind of weird glow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I found that when I read it, this kind of like red kind of hat thing sort of starts appearing over my head.
Oh.
Which is kind of, and I keep hearing like, I don't know, people kind of calling out to me for help. I don't know. It's weird. But anyway, we'll see how it goes this weekend. Yeah.
All right. Well, enjoy that reading. And we will talk to you next time. And let us go now to our conversation with the great Emma Caulfield.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray. We're culture writers, podcasters, and hosts of the show Love to See It.
Every week, we give an unapologetically feminist dissection of reality dating shows, rom-coms, and other romance narratives. We unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
And we dive into all the details with special guests like actors, authors, and cultural critics.
You can find Love to See It wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes drop every Tuesday.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me about your WandaVision journey and everything else that's going on in your life. I wanted to start with, did you expect when you signed on to this project with Jack Schaefer, who you've worked with before, let me start here. How aware are you of like how much theorizing and speculation was swirling around your character in the show?
I knew that pretty quickly. I mean, yeah. The fan reaction was immediate, and I was extremely surprised. I was thrilled. I just wasn't expecting that, I don't know, maybe that quickly or if at all. I try not to have expectations about anything that I do because, you know, it can go so many different ways. It's out of my control. So when it kind of exploded like that, I was like, oh, this is so much fun. This is great. You know, just getting completely versed in the Marvel universe. I'm in a weird mood. I was like, who are these people? This is amazing. Let me look this up. Or like, oh, I know that one. Or, oh, what a good theory, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I was very happy, to say the least, that people responded so well and so immediate.
Matt Shackman gave this interview earlier this week where he was talking about, oh man, all these fan theories are a little like out of this world, and the answer is going to be a little bit more straightforward than people are expecting. So when this happens, when people, you know, you're familiar with large, you know, genre TV, when people are, have built up their expectations around something or specifically around your character, you know, what are you thinking about? Okay, what's going to happen when the truth comes out about this, you know?
You know, you want everyone to be satisfied. You want everyone to be happy. You know that you're never going to please everybody. But I was very aware of the magnitude the sheer magnitude of the lore or the theories around Dottie. It's so massive that I knew there's just going to be no, it was impossible for people to not be disappointed. Like, you know, and me feeling like I'm trying not to feel disingenuous, like doing my job and promoting and being stoked to be part of everything. And, you know, but knowing full well, like, oh man, that's just so far removed from the truth. Oh my goodness. Sure. I hope you're not disappointed. You know, that's tough. Being this, you know, red herring of sorts is, you know, it's challenging. And I knew that's, you know, what was going on for the most part. But, you know, again, I hope no one eggs my house.
Oh, man. No, I mean, my reading of all of this is that we were so excited when you showed up in episode 2 because, you know, we're huge fans of yours. On this podcast that we're recording this interview for, both of my co-hosts were like, oh my God, Emma Caulfield's here. And I thought I was going to be the one to say, oh my God, Emma Caulfield's here, because we're all huge, you know, Anya fans and beyond. And so I think your very presence, just an Emma Caulfield in the cast, gets people excited and just wanting to see everything they possibly can see from you. So hopefully some of it feels just hugely complimentary of us just like being excited to see you, you know?
Oh, no. That's thrilling. And I'm very intended, you know, it's to have me show up in that fashion, you know, calculated is not the right word, but it's purposeful.
Right.
You're not going to have me show up and immediately think there's nothing to my being there.
Right.
You know, it's obviously going to pull in a crowd. It's going to pull in certain, you know, very similar fan bases. There will be speculation as to who my character is from the beginning. I mean, that was intended and like a very purposeful direct. It was just for me, as things kept getting more and more intense around, well, she's this or she's this or she's this. And I'm like, first of all, I mean, I could never say anything anyway. I can, you know, can I talk still? Am I cool to talk? I was just worried for me, like, oh man, I hope I'm not going to bum anybody out by not being who you want me to be,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's all it. And I know there's still speculation about, you know, my name being Sarah and this character Sarah and whatever. And like, I actually generally don't know anything about that either. I would really, of course, like to continue on in any fashion that Kevin Feige sees fit. Oh, it's a really great, it's a great universe to be a part of. So we'll see.
So the intention was to put you in there as this sort of like red herring. So, and what that means for you, is you get cast in WandaVision and you can't tell anyone until episode 2, premieres. What was that sort of secret keeping experience like for you?
Yeah. Once the press saw the first couple episodes, then everything was, you know, I was like, okay, now it's out. You can go and you can say whatever, blah, blah, blah. Which was a huge relief because it is hard to keep a secret. I mean, that was from October 2019,
wow.
You know, and really was just so jonesing to talk about it or just be supportive, even just be from like a fan perspective, tweet links to how cool Lizzie Olsen is, or like this or that, or like, hey, you guys see this cool, my God, I'm so looking forward to WandaVision. Just like a being, you know, on the peripheral, just like peripherally supportive, without necessarily having to draw attention to me. Like, why is Emma tweeting it? You know,
right.
I couldn't do anything. I couldn't talk. I literally couldn't even met. I just like this, a whiff of me being involved was just not allowed. So, you know, once I actually got to start talking, it was like, oh, thank goodness. And then I'm like, I still can't say anything.
Right.
You're like, who are you? Can't tell you. But, yeah. Well, how many episodes are you in? I can't tell you that either. I can't tell you anything, but it's a really fun show and I love playing Dottie. And I'm obsessed with all the actors and just in awe of how brilliant they all were on a daily basis.
Can you talk about the experience of, I know the production was a little split because of COVID. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about filming the last two appearances you have in episode 7 and episode 9? Did those happen much later than your earlier appearances? What was that like?
I started, so we, The show started October 19 in Atlanta. I was down there for rehearsals and doing all kinds of stuff down there. And then everything broke for the holidays. And we were supposed to come back in, I think, February or whatever. The production was always moving back to Los Angeles. So, but then COVID happened and everything got shut down. So we didn't pick anything back up again until August of 2020. And we piled everything in pretty quickly. I mean, we had, you know, they wanted to launch when they wanted to launch, and we had to get through things. And there was a lot to get through, and the production's massive and incredibly dope. I think I wrapped about I was done. We went right until just about like close to Thanksgiving. It was right, we finished around the end of November. And you know, we were shooting also through incredibly intense heat waves. It was really, really bad. We were shooting all outdoors and lights. It was very, very hot, and it was difficult. And I wasn't even on like the wires, like Catherine and Paul and Lizzie. Just like, it was, you know, I don't know if you remember. It's hard to remember much anymore because all the days kind of blurred together. But like, that particular time was excruciatingly hot. It was an unbearably bad heat wave that we had. And we shot a lot of those scenes, you know, a lot of the fighting, the finales, like all that. That was all in the blazing, blazing hot sun. Mm-hmm. So that was challenging. But I think it probably just added to the intensity, really. We're all just trying not to pass out.
Do you know if anything, I know because the order of release of these projects was sort of flip-flopped because of COVID delays. I've heard that some of the ending of the show has changed just because it's all happening in different order. Is that your understanding as well? Like, was anything changed about your final appearances in the show?
See, honestly, I don't know. We never shot anything in order anyway.
Fair.
and we jumped around all over the place. I mean, we were constantly just, you know, catching things when we could. We had weather delays, or you have wind delays. We had, you know, bad fires, and we'd have to shut down production for that and move things around. The COVID protocols were, you know, great. They kept us safe, you know, very, very specific. There were a lot of things like, well, we need to shuffle this. We need to move this. We're not going to shoot this episode tomorrow or the scene. We're going to shoot that next week. I mean, things were constantly changing. So it really, I mean, for real, that was it was a chaotic because people didn't know what they were doing. It was chaotic at times because the world was chaotic. And it's like, not just COVID. Now we have crazy fires. Now we have windstorms with the fires. Now the air quality, we can't even see. We can't, you know, like, it'd be like fog, but it's dirt. Like, you can't see your hand in front of you. We can't shoot. You know, there was just a lot of that in addition to shooting things that were wonderfully, you know, climatic. It was just a lot of that kind of thing. So at that point, I just stopped trying to really prepare anything. It's like, am I going to work tomorrow? I don't know. I'll find out at midnight, or I'll find out at 5 o'clock when they okay the day, or in the morning, or, you know, whatever, that kind of thing.
I'm curious, you know, having worked with Jack before, and by the way, I was a huge Buffy fan. So when Timer happened, I watched it like when it was released because I was so excited to follow you wherever you went. So I'm an old school Timer fan. So I was excited to see that you and Jack had sort of reunited on this. And I'm wondering, you know, given that established collaborative relationship you guys have, what's your perception of this as like you know, a big project for her. This is something she's described as her baby. Like, what has this moment been like for her from your perspective?
From my perspective, it would be obviously a tremendous amount of pressure. There's always an extreme amount of pressure with any project that you actually get, you know, hired to do and greenlit and financed. You know, there's always different stages of stress. And just the level of expectation levied at this particular project. And then the other subsequent layer of being a female in charge of it, you know, all those layers. You know, and I would remind Jack, like, this is not your, you know, this is not your freshman album. This is your sophomore album. Your freshman album was Timer. You succeeded with Timer. You killed Timer. Timer was dope. People loved it.
It is.
You know, you knocked it out of the park. So, you know, in a way, you know, to try to just relax a little bit. It's impossible to relax. We all can't do that. But, like, you know, it's not the first thing she's ever done. And plus, she'd already, you know, worked on Black Widow. And, you know, she's just a very gifted creator, writer, human being in general. She's just, her sense of humor, lightning fast. She's got one fast, she's like the sharpest, what is it, like the old Westerns, like the sharpest shooter in the West or whatever. But it's like her brain now. You know, it's rapid fire, and everything she comes up with is brilliant and hilarious. So to have all of that weighing down on you obviously is a lot. But I mean, the minute it got, you know, any critics had their hands on it, you know, it, I think it weighed a lot of fears because it was a hit, critically well received, extremely well received, fan, you know, received well, like, you know, all of it. And for her, you know, I just think the world of her. I mean, I just, whatever Jack wants, I think Jack should have, you know, I don't think there should, I just think it should be nothing but green lights for her for the rest of time. And if I get to be a part of, if I get to be in the car when she's going through those green lights, and, you know, I'll happily be in the back, on the side, the trunk, like wherever,
tending the roses in front of the suburban house, whatever she wants from you. Yeah, no, it's really exciting to think of a creator like Jack, who, you know, also did work on Black Widow, being handed such important keys for this new era of this massive story that they're telling. Like, what do you think it means, that Marvel and Disney are looking to creators like Jack? Like, I'll say this specifically, something I love about WandaVision. And this comes down to your great scene in the finale, is this, empathetic treatment.
Oh my God. Sorry. That's so funny. You mentioned that, not to cut you off, but yeah. Like, I was so unhappy with that performance. I couldn't even tell you.
Were you? Why?
So unhappy. I don't know. I just wasn't happy with it. Like, shooting it. It was, you know, I wanted, this is just like a couple of scenes where I really wanted everything to land, and I was never quite satisfied.
Well, I think it landed very well. So, from my perspective.
I appreciate that a lot. It's just funny. It's just like, it's always so much different in your head. But anyway, I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Well, what did you want it to be that you felt like it wasn't?
I don't know. I feel like if I'm aware of what I'm doing on any level, then I'm not fully present then. And I think I was aware of myself, a couple of different times during, you know, the finale, like, wait a minute, like, aware of where my hands were, or aware of how my posture was, or aware of the heat, or aware of, you know, whatever it may be, where, you know, you ideally just want to be kind of almost like you're sleepwalking, you know, you want to be able to do the job and not walk into the wall, but you're not aware that you're asleep. You know what I mean? But awake.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, that's what it was. It had nothing to do with anybody else. I'm just like, oh man, I don't know. I'm loud. Did you maybe cry too soon? Or, oh, maybe you shouldn't have cried at all. Or, oh, did you get that beat? You know, maybe, no, I wanted to hit that line a little different, or stare a little longer, whatever. My own, like, actor insecurities or perfection, yeah. Perfectionistic things. Yeah.
Well, what I was going to
say. And you also want to match how good everybody else is. Shredded that whole. I mean, she's just so good, and fully think she should get an Emmy. And I'm I'm so impressed.
She's so good in that moment, and that moment. But what I was going to say exactly is that moment between the two of you, which is like a mother talking to a mother about their kid, and like it just seems like a kind of moment we haven't quite seen before. There's plenty of moments in this show that we haven't quite seen before in the MCU, which just seems to be something a little bit more invested in genuine female-fronted storytelling. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Having that perspective come through, for sure. You know, it's such an... Yeah. It's like an... Even if, for me, it's not even something so specific as it just is an essence. Like, I can not, like, as a woman, female, I could try to describe what that's like to somebody who's not. And they're like, well, what's it like being a woman? I don't know. What's it like being a man? I don't know. That answer is going to be different for everybody.
Yeah.
But there is, I don't know if ephemeral is the right word I'm searching for, a mercurial. It's just this kind of unspoken vibe. It's a vibration that, when it's, what you notice once you have that thing that you can't quite grasp onto, that unspoken whatever, that connection between two females, or the presence of that female, in quotes, all of it, energy, you don't realize how much it was lacking until it's present, you know. And it doesn't necessarily mean the actual presence of the actress on camera or whatever. It's just an energy that comes with being that sort of the feminine in nature, the feminine, that thing. And in that scene, particularly the feminine of motherhood and all the other layers that go along with that. And it's powerful, and it's not, like you said, it's not really touched upon. And I think it's for the better that it has been. I think it's all been done beautifully. She's just so good. I get to literally just talk about Lizzie and how many layers that girl peeled off. Like, those, just a joy to work with her and with Jack, and just to have, again, all this energy infused with the words and with the vibe on set, and just everything. You know,
it's like
didn't,
that.
It didn't negate the male energy at all. Yeah. Everybody just, everything just enhanced. Everybody enhanced, you know, the male female dynamics, everything, they were just enhancing each other. You know, no one had to get sold out or demonized or lessened. It was just like, there's plenty of room for all of this. And when you allow that space, beauty comes.
There's, you talk about, like, you don't know how quite to describe it. And it's like that, not to drag this into a discussion of a Disney show, but it's like that old quote about pornography, which is like, you know it when you see it, right? Yeah, you know it. Yeah. you know that, like, a woman has worked on this project when you see it, as a woman watching. That's my experience, at least. And I just think that there is just so much empathy. And, like, you know, Captain Marvel, it is a Marvel movie that I really enjoyed, but that's a different kind of female experience. That seems more like workplace gaslighting female experience. And this is like, this is so domestic. And I think that is such a very interesting place. You know, this is a home. This is a mom. These are her kids. This is that kind of female experience is something I think I never thought I'd see in a big sort of superhero property. Do you know what I mean?
But aren't we, I mean, I, as a mother, I don't know if you are a mother, but I, I feel superhuman surviving yep. every day with a nearly 5-year-old. I'm like, I could never have imagined the amount of energy and stress, not bad, but like, the amount of that you take on, it's like literally taking on the entire world when you have a child, because you're responsible for this person and you're placing this person in the world. And you're acutely aware of how the world is affecting this little tiny being. And so it's all encompassing all the time. And, you know, this, like, you just, the amount of times I've surprised myself daily, like, oh my God, I can't believe pat on my back, like, whatever. And just like giving a shout out to all the moms out there who don't wear capes. Well, I think we should all start wearing capes. You know, who not only just take on this immense responsibility of motherhood and guiding a little being into the world, but then also going out into the other universe, the universe that doesn't have your child in it, the workforce, the whatever, and crushing that too, or not crushing it in some cases, just being like, you know, being human. It is, I think, really poetic and beautiful that the show does, like you say, and just sort of on this domestic life and all this energy and all this power or lack of power and grief and promise and all of that that is wrapped up in that bubble, while also mirroring in a unforeseen way, beautifully, our own bubbles at home. And the pressures and the being in the pressure cooker of being in a bubble, which we have all been with lockdowns and everything else and all the grief, and how beautifully the show and how beautifully Lizzie showcased that grief and that promise and the desire to change things. Having more power than you realize, or not having enough. I can't think of a more timely show in WandaVision right now.
Yeah, this
that's a very long answer.
No, okay. I do think the grief element of the show snuck up on a lot of people, and in this moment of global grieving that we've been in for the past year, it really has landed on a level beyond sort of the explosive colored magic, you know, balls of light being thrown around in the sky, which is going to appeal on one level, that exploration of trauma and grief, and especially like grief as it's experienced in your home, is something we all can really relate to right now.
Very much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm curious, What else is going on with you right now? I mean, five-year-old sounds like enough. Plus being on a highly secretive Marvel show where you can't say a single thing about what you're doing also seems like enough. But is there anything else that you've got cooking that we should be on the lookout for?
Well, in typical fashion, I'm not allowed to say anything. So there you go.
Really?
I can neither confirm nor deny reports of me doing anything. I can confirm that I'm really enjoying cooking a lot. I am really digging that. And I can confirm that my daughter is the best thing in my entire and all my universes. But yeah, I can't talk anything.
Oh, that's fascinating. Okay. Interesting. That's not, I wasn't even fishing for that answer, and yet there it is. Okay. Well, great. Is there anything else you want to say about WandaVision or Jack or your experience on the show?
I'm just incredibly blessed. I just feel very blessed that I was part of this really beautiful, intricate, layered, phenomenal show. Just that alone is a lot, but also to been able to have worked at all during the lockdown, that we were blessed enough to come back when, you know, like we were one of the first ones to try it, like test ballooning, seeing how we could get through this. And that we did it well, and that no one was sick. Everyone really pulled together because there was so much at stake. You know, people needed to work and wanted to work, and there's so much value in that. You know, just to like, okay, wow, you know, okay, I get to not only do something I'm really into, but I get to be lucky enough to work in a time when many people are not. So the whole thing is just an enormous gift, and I can't wait to work with Schaefer again. I'll just follow her to the moon and back. And all applause to Matt, who is just this wonderful, spirited captain for all those months, who never was in a bad mood, who never lost his temper, whose enthusiasm was contagious, and, you know, also kind of stock Catherine Hahn, who just I'm in awe of her as well. Just everybody. It was a wonderful time, and I'm very blessed. And thank you very much, Kevin Feige.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Emma Caulfield. It's a personal thrill to talk to you. I'm such a huge fan. So thank you.
Stop it.
It's true. It's true, man.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
All right. Hello, and welcome back to, the back half of this show. Just so you know, Anthony and I are going to have a little brief little chat here, but we're probably going to answer more of your emails and that sort of thing, in the episode that we're going to drop next week.
We need time to digest, you know, and absorb.
Yeah. So you can still send us emails, stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. We really loved, if you missed it, we did a little like sort of mailbag episode a couple days ago before the finale, and we loved getting all of your emails. So please do send us more emails. And I know we have a few sitting unanswered in the inbox right now, so we will get to those, I promise. I wanted to mention two housekeeping things before we get into the episode itself. One is that someone did email in response to some of our discussions about Marvel TV to mention that we missed out on a big show, which is Agent Carter, which is, you know, yeah, obviously this is Peggy Carter, Haley Atwell's character, who, you know, had her own series. And that series also was about, you know, grief and loss. It's about Peggy sort of mourning Steve and stuff like that, and female created and all this sort of stuff like that. So my deep apologies. I did watch and was really charmed by that show.
I like that show. I thought that was one of the best of the Marvel TV shows, actually.
I agree.
And most connected to the MCU.
Yeah. So when we were talking about connections to the MCU, we missed a big one. So thank you for that email. I think that came from Carol. Thank you so much for that reminder. And then Anthony Brezdikin, the question on everyone's minds this Friday morning. What do you call a gathering of witches, Anthony?
Okay, so I believe most people would say that a gathering of witches is a coven, and I know that that's how it's pronounced, but some listeners of the show have noted that I tend to pronounce it a different way. I pronounce it like coven, and I
like COVID, funny, but with an N at the end of it. Coven.
Yeah.
Coven.
And I know I do it. It's every time I say it, I know it's wrong. And I do it anyway, and it's too late. But, like, I was really I was amused that somebody, one of our listeners, noticed. And I have to say, it's not strictly like it's not a Pittsburgh accent thing, although that there's a little bit of that sometimes in the way we pronounce things. But if everybody would think way back 20 years ago to the year 2001, which used to sound like the future, but now is the very distant past. There was a documentary called American Movie that was about a young guy named Mark Borchardt, who was, I think he was in the Midwest somewhere. I can't remember exactly where, but like he was just, he was not a connected guy. He was just like a Kevin Smith wannabe filmmaker from nowhere who is going to make a horror movie called Coven. And there's a scene in the movie. I don't know if Dave can even insert this clip.
The name of the film is Coven.
It's pronounced Coven, man. What else could it be pronounced?
Coven. That's the proper pronunciation.
No. Coven sounds like oven, man. And that's just, it doesn't work.
Coven. Coven. Coven?
Unless you want to put an umlaut or something over the O.
A what? You mean those? Oh, hold on a second. Those two dots?
Yes. Possible.
Part of the charm of the movie is how, just like how his will to power, he is so determined to make this movie, and he is so confident in everything he's doing, even though it's not fully working. And his pronunciation of Coven is one of it, and like one of those things. And so I've just absorbed the word coven to replace coven. It's kind of, I think I described it in Slack to you yesterday as like it's like why it's like letting these wildflowers grow even though they're an invasive species. So every time I've said the word coven, this is the conversation that's in my brain. It's like, no, it's coven. Yes, I know, but I like coven. I like that thing from the movie. And no, yeah, but it's wrong and people are going to notice. Nobody's noticed. Well, okay, somebody finally noticed. Here's my long explanation. It's a little personal in-joke. It's kind of like people calling Target Tarjay, and eventually you stop saying that ironically and you're just calling it Tarjay.
I was telling Anthony that I often pronounce the word milk as malk because of a Simpsons joke. So, you know, these things just happen. Anyway, that is why Anthony does know how it's supposed to be pronounced, but that's why he pronounces it COVID.
I know.
So what did you think?
But I don't do it intentionally. It's not like I deliberately do it. I just do it. And then I go every time in my head, I'm like, it's not COVID. Anyway.
So that's Linguistics Corner with Anthony Preskin and Joanna Robinson.
You should put umlauts over it. Just put umlauts.
Anthony, before we get into this episode, I just, you know, Richard and I just announced that we're going to be covering Falcon and Winter Soldier next. And I'm just wondering, like, you know, really quickly, if you could say, you know, why that's what we're doing and whether you're excited for it and what you think.
I'm not excited. I can't believe you've dragged me into this. No, I was sad that WandaVision was ending because I've enjoyed these talks so much and I've really enjoyed the listener responses. And man, I can't wait to do it again. And just, and also, we don't have to wait a long time. It's like coming right up. It's not like The Mandalorian where we've got like another, okay, I'll catch you next year. Like we've got Falcon and Winter Soldier coming right up in a couple of weeks. So yeah, I hope that that show gives us the fertile ground to project all our cockamamie theories that never pan out. Our deep dives.
What was your reaction? I already revealed mine, and I'll tell you in a second. But what was your reaction every single time something happened in the finale where like it made it very clear that we were super off base with any of our fan theories and thoughts?
I was okay. I was okay with it because I think it matched my final theory in our last episode. Do you remember when I said, last thing here, expect like a battle between the witches, expect visions to face off. Don't expect Marvel to go like deep into some sort of
mythology
explanation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think we got that. So I feel like, you know, I kind of pulled out of that dive at the last second. But here's the thing. Yeah. They did give us a lot of clues and things to read into that didn't pan out. And I don't know that that's our fault. Like, we followed the breadcrumb trail. It's not our fault that it led to, like, the Looney Tunes black wall painted like a tunnel. Like, we just ran into it.
I'm telling Richard, my reaction every time was just sort of like, oh, well.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
It was
okay.
Fun while it lasted, you know. I think we were right about most things. You were right about her reabsorbing Vision as a
I'll give myself partial credit for that. Sure.
I'll give you full credit for that. I mean, you're not expected to. That's what happened. Like, you don't have to spell it out. It wasn't like oh, now I shall reabsorb you. But that's what happened, is that wall was closing in on them. That's the moment they had. And I thought that was actually pretty beautiful. I was satisfied overall by the thing. I'm disappointed that Agatha wasn't trying to like resurrect a Senior Scratchy. I do think the Ralph Boner joke.
Yeah.
B-O-H-N-E-R was like, I mean, like,
completely. I was telling Richard this is, I mean, the finale is where the Richard and Anthony segments sort of come together, in a grand Scarlet Witch fashion. Because, yeah, I mean, there's nothing really further for us to speculate here. The Boner joke is just really, that's the only moment of the finale where I was just like, really?
Yeah, that was a letdown.
Stuff just feels like,
why cast Evan Peters from another cinematic universe if you're not going to do something it was, with that?
I'm absolutely sure they thought it was funny. And I'm like, this isn't funny. Other things are funny. It's funny that Paul Bettany was teasing himself. That's funny.
Yes.
This is
the actor that
he
most admired working with was himself. Like, is that really what he was doing?
Yeah. I think that's funny. The Quicksilver stuff I feel less funny about.
I have one thread. We don't have to go deep into this. But, like, what happened to the beekeeper?
I mean, I don't know.
Did he just die? That was a human being. Like, we never saw his face. Like,
I know.
Did someone love him and care about him?
Like, did somebody love him?
Like,
will no one think of the beekeeper?
Yeah, well, no one think of the beekeeper? Like, he put his life at risk to crawl into the hex, and like, and he just vanished. Like, he didn't get thrown out of the hex. Did she just dissolve him like they did to the people they killed in Breaking Bad? Like, where did he go? I don't know. Everybody else got a little bit of like, she was like, I'm so sorry, you know, that I basically puppeteered you guys for a while. And like, meanwhile, the beekeeper is gone. I don't know. I think they just forgot about him.
Yes, I do think they forgot about him. I think some people thought he had been like repurposed into the town, but we never really got a payoff on that. And, you know, and that's sort of, I think, what Matt Shakman was sort of preparing us for, which is just sort of like, ramp down your expectations for this finale. You've spun yourself up, kids. You've had too much fan theory juice. But I really don't think it's the absence of fan theory payoff that leaves me where I'm feeling with this finale, which is just sort of like, I wanted more of that, like the stuff we got with the WandaVision farewell. I thought that was so well done. I think if Agatha and Wanda could have found like a space, be it, you know, a space in a different, you know, plane of existence or whatever, to have like a quieter chat about things, I think that would have been more fun for me than like trying to do it while they're flying through the air. There's a little bit of that in the like flashback to the Salem scene, mm-hmm. which I thought was very creepy and well done. But I think even more just like quiet for them. That's what people want from a Marvel show, right? Two ladies quietly talking in a room. Oh, is that just me? I don't know. But like a little less hurling fireballs at each other and a little bit more of these two great actresses digging into this really meaty question of power and danger and responsibility. Do you know what I mean?
I'll tell you, I think Marvel does this. Like, when they have the quiet moments, they make them really loud. You know?
What do you mean by that?
Well, like, if when you have this thing where the two characters have to have a heart-to-heart and finally reach a resolution, let's do it while they're flying around and hurling fireballs, and there'll be giant lightning-filled scarlet clouds billowing all around. Like, they amp up the environment and the situation to have the conversation. You know, it's never just like a Noah Baumbach thing in a room. You know,
what's your favorite fight in a Marvel movie? Like, what's a fight that you just like really loved?
A fight that I really love. I gotta go to the Black Panther fight. You know, between
that's so interesting. Killmonger and T'Challa. Yeah.
Killmonger and T'Challa. I was going to say the actors. Fight between Chadwick Boseman and Michael B. Jordan, but they probably got nowhere near that fight.
digital pixels in suits. Yeah,
stunt people. But like, that I think that fight. I mean, partly because again, you know, it's those quiet moments they have at the end and the exchanges they have. But it's in amongst this big sparkling clash that's, you know, in the caves of Vibranian mines and literally taking place, someone pointed out, on an underground railroad. And like, had some big ideas. It had some, very personal moments as well. And yeah, I think that's probably my favorite fight. How about you?
Yeah. So like for me, for Black Panther, I don't, that fight is actually one of my least favorite parts of that movie, because I think it just feels so disconnected from the characters because they're in those full body suits. For me, the part right at the very end where the two of them are talking on the cliff,
that's the payoff, right?
That's power. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think that's what I want from Marvel. That's not quite what Marvel has on offer, and that's okay. But yeah, so do you have any like questions from this finale or any like particular moments that stand out to you especially?
Yeah, I mean, where does White Vision go, right?
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that Vision lives on because he downloaded all his memories into the White Vision. Is that what we call him, the White Vision?
I mean, who knows what we want to call him. The closing credits just called him the Vision. So,
So it's like he just reminds me of like an unpainted ceramic at Color Me Mine. Doesn't he?
The thing that makes so we saw the memory download and it feels like all of the memories went in there. you know, even the Wanda memories. Because, like, in the comics, right, like, White Vision doesn't remember his love for Wanda. And that's a point of trauma for her, right? Mm-hmm. It seems like Purple Vision put all of his Wanda memories in there. Or unlocked them. He didn't put them in there. He unlocked them in White Vision, right? But if that were the case, if that version of Vision, tongue twister, were just completely the Vision we know and love from the films, wouldn't he have flown to Wanda's side to help her?
Mm.
And because he didn't, that to me feels like he might remember her, but he's not, maybe he doesn't, maybe there's committed. Just something about him where he doesn't feel the same things. That whole ship of Theseus conversation, you know what I mean? So, like, he might remember it, but I don't know that he feels it, because otherwise I think he would have been in that fight with them, you know?
Also, the ship of Theseus thing was a lot. That was a lot at 1 a.m, couple of rum and cokes deep. like to fall. Talk about, like, okay, there's your like quiet moment, right? They're in this blown out library and they're just having like this discussion about the ship of Theseus. I'm like, yeah. Okay, guys, can we get back to the punching? But it was good. I liked it. I'm gonna have to Wikipedia that.
I love that moment. But again, like, that's a moment where I wish they hadn't been floating through the air. But as you say, like, Marvel's never gonna give me that. Yeah. They're always gonna be floating through the air when they're talking about the ship of Theseus. Yeah, what about the way in which Wu and Monica and Darcy and Hayward were all used in this episode?
A little perfunctory, like,
yeah.
Darcy, you know, is this brilliant, smart aleck astrophysicist who also knows a lot about pop culture. Like her and her power in the finale was to crash the car into Hayward.
Right.
You know, I feel like I think it's like endings are tough because buildups are more interesting and you get to guess what's coming. And then ultimately it's just going to be a fight and then a little bit of conversation to resolve it. And then everybody's going to move on. I didn't feel like anybody got a real surprising moment at the end, you know? You agree?
I think I was wondering why it was that Darcy wasn't there at the end, and like my most cynical brain was like, Kat Dennings was not available for post-COVID reshoots or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like her role in the finale was so, like, she could have done that from anywhere.
Maybe. I did like the resolution for Agatha. Like, I know there was a question last week about whether she would die. And I'm glad she didn't die. And I think...
Right, so they put her on ice and they can use her again if they want to, right?
Yeah, and you know, we talked last week about, like, crime and punishment, right? And I think we decided we would not call it punishment, but consequences. Like, her consequences of her actions is that she doesn't get to live in her glamorous purple floaty witch form that she actually has to be. The Snoopy neighbor, that's just going to be her prison. Like, she has to be Agnes. She has to be Agnes. And, like, I what I liked was, I think that's, like, Catherine Hahn's truest form. Like, she's her most confident and funny and sharp when she is, you know, throwing out the puns, the little quirky neighbor puns. Like, I thought that she's really great in that role. So if that's how we get Agatha going forward, I'm all for it.
Well, I feel like what they're laying the groundwork for is that, like, they will need her to help with Wanda.
And that was a great line too. I'll know where to find you. Like,
yeah. Ooh. Or Wanda will need her to help her help herself or something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's I don't know. I'm excited to think about this more. Honestly, I feel like we're doing this like slightly surface, and that's just because there's a lot to digest. And I'm excited that we're going to do another episode next week. The Agatha thing, yeah, it feels like something that Thor would do to Loki.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not dead, but you got, you're in a timeout.
You work in office space now, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah. Exactly.
Get those TPS forms, do me. Like.
All right. Well, anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, I mean, I do think there's, I think a little disappointment in the quality of the finale. It's no, like the, I think one of the best episodes was the Agatha All Along episode, you know, like we didn't really get any explanation for, what the purpose of the same actors in the commercials were. You know, I thought there should have been, I think when you create a mystery, you need to respect that you've created that mystery and resolve it in some way for people. You know, the same goes for Rey in Star Wars. If you're going to make us wonder who her parents are, don't then go, well, why do you care about that? Like, you made us care about that. As long as there's some resolution, stick to it. And this felt a little bit like that. Like, they built up a bunch of mysteries and then resolved the core of it and then left a bunch of other threads hanging. The thing I found most satisfying is that I like the line, I don't need you to tell me who I am. That she's Scarlet Witch and she knows what she can do. I also like that the acknowledgement, I think I'm, you know, this is a little payoff from what I think you or I had described in the past episode, that Agatha knows book learning. Like, she knows yeah, all yeah, the recipes, but she doesn't have any of the art, like, or the raw talent, or she, yeah. Or she has some obviously raw talent, but like, not as much as Wanda. And yeah. That Wanda learned the runes trick. I love that Agatha was undone by her own, like, little runes trick. And that she made the whole hex her broom and her space.
That's one of those moments when you wish you didn't watch the previously on. Because they hit the runes thing in the previously on. I was like, oh, that's how Wanda's going to come back. This. Yeah. But often urge people to skip the previously on because they have to do that for people who are watching more casually. But for those of us who are watching a little too closely, I was like, oh, it's the runes.
Yeah, it can project things a little too much.
But I think Agatha said something that almost felt like she was quoting exactly you when you said this idea of Agatha being book learning and Wanda being pure unbridled instinct. Mm-hmm. And that there is enormous raw power there, but without the discipline. Like, she's just using this, the Darkhold, this book, which we should say, one of the most ominous things about that end of credits thing, which, you know, is Wanda studying the Darkhold and hearing her children and, like, thinking about, you know, I don't know, tearing the universe apart to try to find them. I don't know. We'll see what she does. Is in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I don't think this is a direct connection to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but the Darkhold, you know, she names the Darkhold the Book of the Damned. Mm-hmm. It's a book that has existed in Marvel Entertainment before in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It is a different design in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so I don't think they're trying to say this is the exact same book from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But something you should know from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that TV show, is anyone who tried to interact with the Darkhold had a very bad end and a corrupted end. So there's just a lot of danger simply in Wanda reading that book at all. And bear in mind that it still looks like a book that maybe Agatha stole from the library, in Doctor Strange. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, so it's a book that Stephen Strange himself will not have studied, so he won't have that information. And also Agatha, you know, makes note of the fact that the Scarlet Witch will be more powerful even than the Sorcerer Supreme. So if they are at odds in Doctor Strange, advantage Wanda.
One of the things I like is that they leaned into the Halloween-y aspect, if I can make up a little word there, of Scarlet Witch. Like, she's a witch. Like, she's a little bit scary. That's a scary image at the end where she's out on the front porch of her cabin in her snuggly little sweatpants or whatever, little tracksuit. And then she goes inside and you see she's really in the back in this dark room, like floating, you know, spider-like, you know, in this web of magical threads, reading this book with glowing red eyes. Like, I like that they make the witch kind of scary witch. It's not just, I'm a magic person. It's spooky. That was scary. And then you hear her two children calling for her help. So I also felt like, you know, her putting the two kids to bed and then waiting for the shockwave to shrink or the hex to close in, collapse around them, and for them to disappear. That was really sad.
Oh, yeah, no. That and the Vision goodbye, I think, is just like where the show really did a great job. That ominous sort of slow-moving red wall closing in around them.
It reminded me of Election Night.
Election Night?
Yeah.
Tell me why.
I just remember thinking, sorry to veer into politics here, but like that moment when Florida goes Trump and you're like, oh my God, is this going to happen? Like, are we going to be stuck with 4 more years? And I thought it was going to happen, right? I thought that we're doomed, and I just turned everything off and I just went up and played with my kids. Like, we had some Transformer toys and I'm just going to, let's just play. Like, what would I do if the asteroid was coming to Earth? You know, I don't think I would stand out there and stare at it. I would try to like enjoy whatever final moments. And I felt like that's what she was trying to do. Sorry, I said I'd taken a sad turn here. But fortunately, it worked out for the best. But that's what I was thinking. It's like, oh my God, like we're in for a very, this is going to be scary going forward. And at the very least, and if you knew the world was ending, what would you do at that time? Her world was ending. It wasn't just, oh, we're going to let these people go and stop play acting. That bit where she says to Vision, like, this will be bad for our family, but good for the other people. I thought was really moving. She was letting go of the things she loved most. And, you know, I thought that was very affecting. But I'm also relieved to hear that the boys' voices, even though they're in distress, like they're out there somewhere and maybe she can reconnect with them.
Or I suspect we're going to talk about that a little bit more when we talk about this finale next week, this idea of how exactly this might lead into Doctor Strange 2. Please do email us, stillwatchingpod@gmail.com. We'll read all of your emails and read as many of them on air as we can. And we'll have Jack Schaefer and Catherine Hahn to talk to us about the whole series and how it went. And then we will suit up for Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So that's the plan. We're going to do it. We're just going to keep on doing it. Anthony Brezikin. Yeah. Until we meet again, where can folks find you?
You can see me on coven.com talking about witches and pronunciation and 20-year-old documentaries about filmmaking, and also at vanityfair.com.
Excellent. You can find me at vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This, and we will see you next week and beyond. Thanks so much for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.